Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New Yorker.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
And it's yours truly, Curtis Lewa, once again taking you home on the drive home at 5. And the issue that has to be dealt with is right splashed across the front pages of New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News. It's titled, Clueless Commish. Ponte pleads ignorance in breaking city car rules. Didn't read report on plan to shut Rikers. Turns blind eye to spying on investigators. It goes on and on and on as correctional Ponte, the chief, was on the hot seat before the city council yesterday. And some of the city council members were trying to inquire of him. Who was it that told him that he could use his city-issued car to go, what, upwards of 450 miles up to Maine to his Palazzo and then back again at taxpayers' expense?
I misunderstood the city's vehicle use policy. It may serve no purpose to name people, but it was people who worked in the commissioner's office at the point in time.
Come on, drop dime, Commissioner Ponte, drop dime. Snitches get stitches and end up in ditches, only goes for the inmates. Cough it up.
I'm going to ask you again. What are the identities of the people who provided you the guidance that the mayor referred to?
The chief of staff, the first deputy commissioner, people in office at the time I arrived.
And what I understand is they claim that's not so. On the line to discuss all of this is Greg B. Smith, reporter for the New York Daily News. Greg, I see editorially the New York Daily News, your newspaper has urged that this commission has got to go. But can you sort of connect all the dots for us here?
Sure, Curtis. And by the way, very nice juxtaposition of Commissioner Ponte. First not giving up names and then giving up names and then having the names say that they never said that.
Well, thank you. But I thought it was interesting because, you know, in jail, snitches get stitches and end up in ditches. And he was acting like, oh, I can't give up any names. And then all of a sudden he gave them all up and they all said, what is he talking about?
I mean, it's also, I would point out, that was sworn testimony. So at any rate, here's what I understand is going on here. You have this guy from Maine who is picked by de Blasio to run what is perhaps the biggest jail system in America after running a jail system that's like one-tenth the size in the state of Maine, probably less than that. So he drives all the way here. He takes his job, and he apparently he still has his house in Maine. So he spends in the year 2016 90 days driving back to Maine and staying in Maine and running the nation's largest jail system from Maine. And DOI obviously gets wind of this. They're already looking at how everybody over at the corrections department is misusing city-owned vehicles, and they jam him up. They confront him, and he claims that he didn't know that he wasn't supposed to use the car, although I would point out to you that one of his minions had already been cited by the Conflict of Interest Board for doing the same thing. So at any rate, he gets caught, and they issue their report, and the mayor defends him. He goes to the mat for the guy. He is not going to admit that anything untoward happened here. Why? Because the commissioner got bad advice, he claims. And that's why that gets us back to what you were just playing there a minute ago and that quite entertaining city council.
Okay, well, some people, not all, but some, like the mayor, say, hey, look, I'm dealing with billions of dollars in the budget. We're talking about a few shekels here. I'm not going to hold it against him. But then we find out in the city council testimony that he didn't even read the report on the plan to shut Rikers Island.
Neither has the mayor, as far as we know.
Well, the mayor hasn't read it?
Every time people ask him about it, he just doesn't directly address it. It's kind of odd. But, I mean, I don't know why he wouldn't want to read it. I have to say that he has a difficult situation that he walked into because Rikers has got a lot of problems. And the fact that we're spending all this time looking at this guy driving his car to Maine is a little disturbing. And then we have this other business about how one of his internal investigations guy was apparently red flagging DOI investigators to listen in on their conversations and targeting very specific DOI investigators who were working informants inside the jail. The motivation for this is not yet clear, but it certainly seems to raise some alarms, I would say.
So this is sort of like Mad Magazine Spy versus Spy. So he has his...
You're dating yourself with that, Curtis.
Oh, yeah. I love Mad Magazine. Alfred E. Newman, What Me Worry, because it seems like that's what this commissioner is, Alfred E. Newman. But think about it. He has his own internal investigators, which I understand, because they're constantly investigating what goes on in the jail system. But then he sicks them on the Department of Investigation for the City of New York, which is talking with the inmates who are still housed on Rikers who have complaints who might help in the investigation, and they're listening in on these conversations.
Yeah, it's really odd because I spoke with some people about this yesterday, and some of the conversations that they were listening in on had to do with inmate informants telling DOI about behavior by Department of Corrections staff that could be potentially criminal. So you have your internal investigator guy like listening in on that kind of thing. Why is he doing that? I mean, what's the point of that? Is this to kind of keep everything in-house? Or is it just, you know, oh, I happened to come upon this conversation, didn't know what they were going to talk about, and I just forgot to turn off my the device.
So,
I don't know. It's not clear. The motivation for this is definitely disturbing, though.
So, Greg, every other day, if I'm reading the Daily News, it's a problem. The union problem with Seabrook, the former head, corruption. He's been indicted. He's awaiting probably being found guilty and going to jail. Then we have guard on inmate abuse, inmate on guard abuse, and then malfeasance at the top ranks. And they're talking about breaking Rikers Island up and shipping it into the outer boroughs. Don't they recognize
right.
that if they don't deal with the problem on Rikers Island, they're just going to be outsourcing the problem to these smaller jails?
Yeah, I don't understand this. First of all, there's no such thing as close Rikers. All it means is just, it's not close Rikers, it's move Rikers. And moving Rikers into the Brooklyn House of Detention over on Atlantic, how's that going to happen? I mean, and also, just so you understand, there's not enough cells. So I mean, that means that they're going to have to build jails. Now, you point out to me a neighborhood that's going to say, hey, please build a jail in our neighborhood. It's great for business. I don't know. I don't completely understand the rationale behind it.
So I'm sure that some of the guys and gals there at the Daily News, they have an over-under on how long this guy, correctional boss Joseph Ponte, lasts. From your professional estimation, this is like overwhelming malfeasance. It's like he doesn't even care about the job. When do you think that de Blasio drops the axe on?
You know what? It's weird because I don't know if you remember Gladys Carrion. She was the child welfare commissioner.
Yes.
When problems started up with her, de Blasio ran to the woods. He didn't say anything. He, like, disappeared. He wasn't, you know, you could try to get him to say, well, what about Gladys? And so then Gladys suddenly submitted that letter in which she said, time to go. This time, the mayor has gone in the exact opposite direction. He's aggressively backed this guy. And so it's almost like he's got his back up and he won't, admit that there's a problem here. And whether that turns into like yet another revelation about this guy that forces him to turn around on this remains to be seen. But he's putting himself in a corner with this guy.
Well, do appreciate that. That's Greg B. Smith, reporter of the New York Daily News. I suggest you still get those hard copies that are out there on the newsstand. If you're old school like me, you like the feel of the newspaper, you like the sidebar stories. But if not, just go online, because the documentary evidence is there. This commish must go. Although, because he didn't read the report on the plan to shut Rikers, his defense could be, well, I'm like those Republican congressmen who just voted in that new Trump Care Act to replace Obamacare and didn't read the new language in the second time around. Or like when Nancy Pelosi told the Democrats in 2012 in the House, read it after you vote for the bill. Don't worry about it. Or maybe like Hillary Rodham Clinton, who voted to give access to George W. Bush, Bush 43, the right to go to war against Iraq, and never bothered to read the legislation. Does anybody read any of the information that's on their desk? Whether it's de Blasio, who apparently hasn't read the report on the plan to shut Rikers, or his commissioner? Or do you think his commissioner has pictures of Comrade Bill de Blasio in compromising positions that his own Department of Investigation on the Rock Rikers Island has access to? I leave it to all of you.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
There's nobody that knows this city better than Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
Beat the Mets. Beat the Mets. Come on out and beat the Mets. Well, the sad sack himself, Matt Harvey, finally had to impale himself, the pretentious asshole that he has always been, since as a phenom from Connecticut, he could throw a slider at 94 miles an hour, followed by a fastball that would give you a shave at 98 miles an hour. He's had his ups and downs since on the mound for the New York Mets. But you talk about Michigash, craziness, clubbing in the meatpacking district till 4 in the morning, then the following day golfing with a migraine, didn't show up for practice on Saturday, missed his start on Sunday because he was suspended for 3 days. And then today he finally did his mea culpa.
I'm extremely embarrassed by my actions. I apologize to my teammates, to the Mets fans for doing what I did. I take full blame for that, and I've apologized to my teammates. I've apologize to the coaches, and I'm doing everything in my power so that that never happens again.
And this is a Curtis Sliwa Super Sports Spectacular. As I read the sports columns over and over, columnists are calling to trade the bum. That's right, trade the bum. Well, let's get on our sports meister extraordinaire from Imus in the Morning, that you can hear him on from 6 to 9, to his own show that he shares the microphone with Bernard McGurk, the Bernard McGurk Sid Rosenberg show. Hey, Sid, you tried and true Met fan. Was that good enough for mea culpa for you?
Not even close. And when you described him as an asshole earlier in the conversation, Curtis, which was hilarious, you're exactly right. It's not close only because he did this, the same exact thing, almost to the day, 19 months ago before the series against the Dodgers in the playoffs. He's done this before. And here's the problem, Curtis. When you look at the great memories of Matt Harvey, you got to go back over 3 years when he started the All-Star game for the Mets in Queens, as Bruce Bochy put him in there. Then 2005, he had that great game in the World Series against the Royals. Do you know in the last 2 years, he's got a record of 6-12 with an ERA approaching 5? And for his career, by the way, Curtis, he's 31-30. Denny McClain won more games in 1 year than Matt Harvey has in 5 years. So I don't know what all this talk is, how great this guy is. He's got a total of 31 career wins.
Now, did it change when he blew out his elbow and he had the Tommy John reconstructive surgery, or has it always been a mental mind game with him?
It's always been a mental mind game, but you know this. If you're going to go out the other night before and do two 8 balls of cocaine and bang a bunch of hookers and show up late for practice, for the game day, I should say, but you go out there and sack the quarterback 5 times, your name is Lawrence Taylor. We'll let you sleep during the meetings, even though it pisses off Bill Sims. We don't care, because on any given Sunday, every given Sunday, you're going to get 4 or 5 sacks. Well, when Matt Harvey was pitching like he did when he started the All-Star game and in the World Series, that was one thing. But now, like I said, 6-12, ERA approaching 5. He's never won more than 13 games in one season. I think the Mets are coming to the crashing realization he's never going to be that good again, and he was never great to begin with. So why deal with this headache? If I'm the Mets, I don't bring him back next year. He's a free agent. I get rid of him.
No, you got two headaches. You got Dr. Thor, a.k.a. Syndergaard, who thinks he knows better than all the medical practitioners. And obviously, you got, in this case, the Dark Knight, Matt Harvey. But let's flip the script on you and go out to Yankee land. And Mashiro Toro Tanaka never complains. He's had arm injuries, but he's like a machine out there. And what do you make of the New York Yankees hitting attack now?
By the way, different culture, of course. He's Japanese. Those guys go out there. They work hard every single day. And he got the win last night against Cincinnati. Look, to be honest, Curtis, I thought that division was stacked between Boston, Toronto. I didn't see even Baltimore. I didn't see the Yankees this year being a team that contend. I did say before the start of the year, they're a good young ball club. They're going to get better. And maybe a year from now, the Yankees could be that team. No one could have believed they'd be this good early on. 21 wins already, tied for the most in the majors. And like you said, the offense has been amazing. Aaron Judge off to an unbelievable start. Hicks is off to a tremendous start. Didi is back in lineup, hitting the ball well. So they're getting the pitching they need. Sabathia out there tonight. The starters are doing okay. The bullpen has been pretty good. But you're right, Curtis. Offensively, this Yankee team has become a juggernaut, scoring runs at a torrid pace.
Now, could it be the influence in the clubhouse? Last year, there wasn't really a clubhouse leader. This year, it seems that the veteran Matt Holliday is the one that everyone looks up to. Could that be the difference in how this team could be performing so much better than some of these players did last year?
Listen, Holliday's a nice baseball player, great years in Colorado, most recently even last year, a good year in St. Louis. And he's been a nice three-hitter, and he is a veteran presence. But I find it hard to believe that one guy in the clubhouse makes that much of a difference. You know, Brett Gardner is there, too. He's off to a terrific start. Big home run at Wrigley on Friday. He's a veteran. Ellsbury is healthy. He's a veteran. I just think they've got a nice little mix right now, Curtis, of guys who've been there for a while, and these young guys are getting older. Gary Sanchez, another year older. Aaron Judge, another year older, and on and on. So I think Holliday has been a very big help in the clubhouse and in the lineup especially, but I never give one guy credit for turning a baseball team around, making them that good. He's helping them, but I think the kid's getting 1 year older. That's why the Yankees are playing such good baseball.
All right, so Sid Rosenberg, do or die, downstairs already. The Ranger fans gathered around Madison Square Garden for Game 6 against Ottawa. Your call.
Well, listen, the home team has won every game in this series, as you know. Ottawa winning games 1 and 2 in Canada. Rangers 3 and 4 easily, by the way, outscoring Ottawa 8-2 at the Garden in games 3 and 4. Ottawa gets to win game 5. So if the script holds, the Rangers will win this home game tonight. And then we got a big question coming up in Ottawa for game 7. I mean, we know this. The Rangers have completely outplayed that team, Curtis. They blew a 2-goal lead with 3 minutes to go in game number 2. They blew another lead late with 2 minutes to go in game number 5. This series should be over. They've outplayed them. They're more aggressive offensively, but for some reason, in games 2 and 5, their defense and Lundqvist really fell apart down the stretch. I expect the Rangers to win easily tonight and game 7 in a tight one. I do think the Rangers move on. And the big question now is, who are they going to play? Because the Capitals won in Pittsburgh last night, and that series is now 3-3.
I got to tell you, though, to me, the defining difference, because I'm a Ranger fan, is when I saw that goon, Chris Neal, come out, who hadn't played. His coach for Ottawa suits him up and tells the 37-year-old goon, go out and start a fight, beat up some Rangers, in which he said, yeah, boss, yeah. And he did, and the Rangers weren't the same after that.
No, you're right. Yeah, listen, the Rangers are not a very physical hockey team, obviously.
Get him. Yeah, boss,
like
yeah.
Grabner is really, you're right, but they're not very physical. So if you beat them up a little bit, Curtis, like anybody else, hey, you know this, Curtis, as a guy that's run this city, you and the Guardian Angels for many, many years, when you beat up a tough guy, they always hit the ground very, very hard, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, if he suits up Chris Neal, whose only reason to be skating on the ice tonight is not his prowess, he's not a stick handler, he simply goes out there and looks to start a fight with the opposition. And the Rangers, I don't think, can man up to him.
Oh, I think we do. We kick him out in the effing teeth. We take one of our skates and a stick, knock his effing teeth out. We'll take the 2 or 4 minute major. We don't care. We'll show them right then and there who's boss. We will beat their ass physically. We will score many goals tonight. It'll be an easy win and an impressive victory for the Hockey Blue Shirts down at the Garden later on tonight.
From your lips to the hockey gods high in the sky.
Curtis, I always say this. You don't get a front seat at GA for picking them right.
That's true. That's Sid Rosenberg. You can catch him with Imus in the Morning as he contributes with sports and commentary 6 to 9. And then he follows with his own show as he shares the mic with Bernard McGurk. It's Bernard McGurk and the Sid Rosenberg Show, 9 to 12, followed by yours truly with Ron Kuby, whose mommy is a commie.
Curtis Lewa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
I'll always love my mama. She's my favorite girl.
Philadelphia Sound, the Intruders, as we continue on the drive home at 5. That leads us to Mother's Day. Mother's Day this coming Sunday. But I'm looking through the New York Daily News today, and I see on page 3, oh, way up in the front of the page, the guy's got some juice. Columnist Gersh Kuntzman, his column is called Call It the Mother of All Rubbish. Gersh Kuntzman, what are you talking about, the mother of all rubbish?
Well, first of all, Working Mother magazine, which I don't know if you read, I read Working Mother. They have come out with their 50 Most Powerful Moms edition, and I object to it. It's the usual suspects: Beyonce, Reese Witherspoon, Ivanka Trump, Chelsea Clinton, all these rich people who have staffs to help them become powerful and to become better moms. I just think it's an insult to everyday moms who wake up at 5 in the morning and spend an hour making lunches and cleaning and doing all the work that men don't do and getting paid 70 cents on the dollar that men don't get. And it's just like, it's like offensive that a magazine that calls itself Working Mother decides to go in the opposite direction.
You know, you are a mother, but it's not in context to what I'm going to ask you now. Do you mean to tell me your life is so miserable, so simple, so worthless, that you actually waste time as a man reading Working Mother magazine every month?
Well, listen, it's an occupational hazard, Curtis. As you know, I'm a journalist first, a man second, and a human being third. I read the article because I was interested to see what Working Mother magazine believes is a powerful mom. And frankly, there's a lot of people on that list. I think the list itself is ridiculous. We all know that mothers do the work of the Lord, if you will. I don't believe in God, but you know what I mean. I don't need a list to tell me that Beyonce is a great mom. I don't even know if she's mom. She's powerful. I don't know if she's a great mom.
Well, she's got thunder thighs, and every time she performs, her hair seems to always be flowing in the air, even though there is no wind factor whatsoever. But who are some of the particular moms, their profiles, that you were offended by when they were being put up on this pedestal?
Well, there's CEO of Google who talked about, you have to read the write-ups. They're all about like, ooh, I'm trying to find the right balance of work and home life. Look, it's a hard balance. We all understand that. That's what Working Mother has been writing about for years. But when you put these celebrities in there complaining about their work and home balance, you know, and not mention the fact that they've got staff, they've got nannies, they've got maids, etc. Look, and I'm not begrudging a rich person the ability to hire help. I mean, I think it's great. It's great for the economy, et cetera. But don't tell me, you know, don't put yourself on a pedestal. Don't be put on a pedestal by Working Mother magazine when we all know that real moms are doing really a lot more hard work.
Oh, you mean you don't have an au pair like some of these women do, Gersh?
All I have is a pair of socks that that have a lot of holes in them. That's the only pair I have.
Yeah, and you're missing a pair that would turn you into a man's man. There's no doubt about that. But I notice you rip into this Dani Walden because she's claiming that it's her goal each and every day, even though she's a big corporate muckety-muck-mocker, you know, Fortune 500 company person, that she wants to rush home to the kids to sit with them at the dinner table and make sure that she's providing them with mentoring and friendship and mothering at the dinner table. What's wrong with that?
No, I think it's great. If you look at that example, she was talking about how she always told whoever the boss was, look, I'm sorry, boss, I always have to be home with my kids. Well, that's great. If you're a high-powered executive, highly sought after, a kind of person who there's bidding wars to get on the staff, I don't know what that's like. I guess you can set your own rules. But to me, that's the equivalent of a Trump tape saying, well, I can do anything. I can grab them by the you-know-what. I mean, if you can set your own rules, great. But 99.9% of the moms out there, like that nurse on the night shift at Montefiore Hospital, she can't set her own rules.
Now, Gersh Kunstman, when I look in the dictionary, the Curtis Sliwa dictionary, and I have your picture, your ufach, next to a term, what strikes a chord with me and you is the term mamaluk. Since you are like a mama's boy to me, I would have thought that every day was like Mother's Day for you, since you were attached to your mom by an apron string. What is it like? Give me an idea of what Mother's Day is like for a mamaluk who comes over to worship his mom and put her on the pedestal.
Well, look, my mother did a lot of incredible work. She didn't try to become the most powerful mom in the country. She was the one who was there when I came home from school. She was the one who made my lunches. She was the one who put the Band-Aid on my knee when I got a bruise or fell down or was bullied. Yeah, Curtis, was bullied, if that's what you want to know, if that's what you want to hear. And the fact is, no, she's not on any power moms list, but she's on my list, and she's the number one, and maybe your mom is number two.
She had to have the patience of a saint to deal with the likes of you, Gersh Kunstman.
She obviously did a good job, Curtis.
Anyway, check out Gersh Kunstman's column, page 3, today's New York Daily News. Try to get the hard copy while they remain at the newsstands. If not, just go right on up online and catch the edition.
Curtis, we're breaking up. Breaking news coming out of the newsroom. We've just heard from ABC News that FBI Director James Comey was fired. We had earlier information that the FBI had sent a letter to Congress clarifying his testimony from last week. We're talking today about Uma Abedin, the Anthony Weiner's laptop, that he said that hundreds of thousands of emails were forwarded to Weiner's laptop. We heard today that Comey misrepresented his statements there, that it was more like a handful of emails. But this just coming in, FBI Director James Comey, who sent that letter last year that Hillary Clinton says affected the presidential election. He has been fired as FBI Director.
By Donald Trump, by the presidency, the President
Pretty
of the
much,
United States.
Just had to let you know.
Whoa, that rocks your world.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
77 WABC.
Keep your suit up if you bottles don't want to dance on board.
These degenerate hip-hop reggaeton monsters. Yeah, this is their rap song, MS-13, the English version. And it's the lead-in to the series that we've been promoting from our own Long Island field reporter, Jerry Barmash.
It's a 77 WABC News special report. MS-13, Long Island's War.
MS-13 is not new to the country, starting more than 30 years ago in Los Angeles. Suffolk County is in the crosshairs for at least a decade, but Police Commissioner Tim Sini says it's now a war with the brutal gang, as 11 people have been killed in the last year. Since teenagers Kayla Cuevas and Nisa Mickens were murdered in September, the Guardian Angels, led by patrol director who goes by the name EQ, are taking to the streets in Brentwood. And after four men were mutilated in a central Islip park, they assemble in that community.
If you have gang members or drug dealers standing right here next to this corner, and this house belongs to somebody, we will stand right here. There's no need for him to stand there. That's not his property. Once you give him an opportunity, he'll bring all his clowns so they can start dealing in front of the house. That's when the shootings and all the bad things start to happen.
I joined them last week on one of those patrols, six men and two women, providing a presence in a neighborhood ravaged and weary from gang violence. I met homeowner Eduardo Santiago along the route.
When you see them coming down your street with all the gang violence, how does this feel?
I feel good. I feel really good because this area is not good right now, you know. That's very, very, very nice. I feel comfortable. I see people like that, you know, because sometimes you never see the people like help you, nobody.
While walking the two-block radius for 2 hours, some people are requesting a photo with the famous community relations organization. However, Eugenia Frank just wants to say thank you as she drives by.
I go out for work every night. I have to be careful. I don't know what's going on. You don't know what can happen. I got to worry about my parents and everything. I love you guys. I thank you so much.
As you can hear in her voice, people are on edge. Mike Ogden, angry with what's happening to his former hometown, praises the Angels' service.
Maybe it'll get other people to get more involved, too, and just be a part of, feel a sense of we could do something about it. We have to pull together, you know, because people tend to be isolated. So if you have a group that can kind of pull, organize like that, the organization is going to be great, you know.
The Guardian Angel, who uses the handle social, is local to Central Islip and Brentwood.
We know the streets, you know, we know a lot of community leaders, we know many people, and that actually helps a lot, and we're getting a lot of support from the community.
But as we'll see in part two tomorrow, not everyone is supportive as I walk with the Guardian Angels in Central Islip. Jerry Barmash, WABC News.
Oh, yeah, Jer. Not MS-13, not 18th Street, not those gangbangers. Anyway, the story of the day, as brought to you by Ken Duffy momentarily before, the President of the United States informed FBI Director James Comey that he has been terminated and removed from office. Trump based that on the clear recommendations of both the Deputy Attorney General and Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And then he picked up the phone and he spoke to Comey directly and said,
"You're fired."
What did he say again?
"You're fired."
Yeah, okay. You know that's going to set it off. That's why you want to be listening to Mark Levin, who used to work in the Justice Department during the Reagan administration. So maybe he's got some insight on the nitty-gritty of what took place between the Attorney General, the President, and James Comey.